You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, September 20th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ben Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon Show. Be with us. Also, a special report from the New York City climate student strike protest from our chief youth correspondent, Myla Cedar, who will be on the scene. Hopefully that'll work out.
Look out, Greta.
Also on the program today, the Trump-suppressed whistleblower complaint apparently involves a promise to Ukraine. Betsy DeVos tells Duke and UNC to make their Mideast Studies program more Judeo-Christian friendly or lose funding. Pentagon presenting Donald Trump with military options in Iran. Just hope that's chitter chatter. The massive student climate strike is on today, as I mentioned. Meanwhile, Pentagon claims they really need that money that Trump diverted to the wall, as Trump looks to divert more money to the wall. And the Customs Border Patrol issued a report a year ago blaming climate change for increased migration. Trump administration buried it. North America has lost 3 billion birds since 1970. Scientists are freaking out. Colt suspends its production of AR-15s. Of course, we'll still have plenty of knockoff AR-15s available for you. If you want to shoot up any type of public space. Bill de Blasio is out of the race. College students doubled their voting rate between 2014 and 2018. Could be a big story in 2020. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell shuts down any type of gun control legislation in the Senate. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. It is Casual Friday. We have some guests in the studio. I didn't realize he was wearing a shirt. There you go. Amy Klobuchar fan in the house. Glad to see that.
Glob gang.
Full complement of folks here today. It is Casual Friday. As such, I am wearing a soft-collared shirt. I hope you enjoy it. Only happens on Fridays when we have a casual dress day here for me. Everybody else dresses casually for the rest of the week as well.
True.
But welcome. As I said up front, we're going to hopefully hear from my daughter, who is somewhere downtown New York City at the climate protest, or at least I think making her way there from her school. She goes to school in Brooklyn. And my son already, apparently this morning, his first grade class marched around the school, went back in quickly. They made a show of it. So New York City, the students are protesting all around in the schools, and the schools find it a good opportunity to talk about something that is real. Climate change is real. It's 2019. All sane human beings who are not either insane or lying for money know that climate change is real. And anyone who knows anything about education knows the best way to teach kids are to get them involved and enmeshed in a subject so they're not just reading it on a book to try and make it three-dimensional. So this is a great opportunity for educators, and I think everyone would agree with that, unless you belong to one of the two categories of people I just referenced. And, of course, I bring you Fox News Channel Today.
Thousands of kids across the country will be walking out of school today to demand action on climate change. Let's bring back our A-team, Juan Williams, Ed Henry, and Jenna Ellis Reeves. All right, Jenna, I'll start
with you. You know, I don't want to get too pedantic here on this day, but if this is the A-team, I would be very, very nervous to see the B-team. But go ahead.
Williams, Ed Henry, and Jenna Ellis Reeves. All right, Jenna, I'll start with you. When I hear kids partaking in protests, I just think, okay, whose idea was that? Whose idea was this?
Right. And, you know, obviously, I think that kids can have their own opinions. I mean, my little brother has been very politically active and, you know, has been a consumer of the news since he was probably 12. And so, you know, we can't say that kids are always just informed by adults. But I think it's a valid question to say whose idea was this and on school time. Right. Because this is also something that if you're going to make a, you know, political move here, is this something that is being led by the school administration? Is it compelled? Is it something, you know, all of these questions are very important. And especially when we're talking about something like climate change, I mean, this is something that, you know, if you look at the Democratic left and you look at everyone on stage, they had a 7-hour debate over this. I mean, who even watched that?
Ed watched all of it.
Oh, my God. Pause it now for 1 second. I just want to walk through some of this here. Now, I remember the extended piece that the A-team did on all the children in church that they see. And who's responsible for that? I mean, sure, I've known some kids who pick up the Bible on their own. But I mean, how are all these kids getting to church? Who's putting that idea in their head? And then, of course, maybe she doesn't have a child who goes to school, but they take field trips all the time. They leave to things like historical places where maybe they'll learn about slavery. Now, I know that's also a political issue. Or they will go to places like, you know, they go down to museums. I mean, the idea that somehow there's something particularly toxic, politically toxic about teaching kids and making kids aware of their ability to push back on something that threatens their very future is pretty bizarre. And then, of course, like they talked about it for 7 hours. It's just stunning that that's actually like they cut away from her saying that to a shot where you see America's newsroom right underneath there. And they talked about it for 7 hours. That's crazy. But let's hear Ed Henry, who comes in with tries to have some like semblance of like of self-respect that he's still on this network.
Something like climate change. I mean, this is something that, you know, if you look at the Democratic left and you look at everyone on stage, they had a 7-hour debate over this. I mean, who even watched that?
Ed watched all of it.
That's great.
He did. He's got it on his Betamax. Betamax, right? You got
that's
Betamax?
Right. I got a Walkman, too.
Not even VHS, but Betamax.
I'm so sorry for you.
Look, my daughter's 15, and to your point about your family, I mean, she's very serious on climate change. She's been talking to me about it. She's following it. I think it's awesome. I think that young people being not just active, but engaged, caring about these big issues, in all seriousness, we like to joke around here. I think that's great, and we shouldn't dismiss it. But I think when they start walking out of class over it, just like they did that, I saw the same at my daughter's school, I think it was last year, about gun control. Again, I think it's very important. It's great for kids, young people, really, not kids anymore, young adults, to be active on these issues, to be educated about them, know the actual facts, but to just say, hey, you can be politically active, you don't have to go to class, I mean, they should be in school doing what they're doing to learn, right? And it, I think it's great they're learning about all these things, but just this political activism.
Here's the worst.
Yeah, wait a second. Now, poor Ed here is like, I need to be able to go home and look at my kid in the face and not say that I denigrated you for actually doing something that I secretly think is correct. But I do need to come up with something that is going to allow me to come on to the next episode of the A-Team. So I have to sort of mitigate this by saying, like, it's great that they're learning, but they should be in class because they're supposed to be learning. So you keep going. Unbelievable. You really threaded the needle on that one, Dad, as Ed Henry comes home. And
it's like, hey, Dad, I'm so sorry that you had to watch all of the climate forums. What a tough job you have.
Yeah, that must have been really difficult.
Isn't it weird how your workplace colleague couldn't watch all of them, but I did as a teenager?
Exactly. And the thing is, can we go back just to look on her face after she says that? Because I think for most of this, like, you know, like I posited up front that you need to be sort of out of your mind to not take climate change seriously, or you just need to be a paid lying shill. I think for most of what she was talking there, she was the paid lying shill. But I think in this moment where she actually reacts to the idea of like 7 whole hours of talking about climate
seems
change.
Genuine
about ecological collapse.
Oh my god, but boring.
The people are predicting literally the deaths by the end of the century of billions of people, possibly. And it's just like, you're gonna dedicate 7 whole hours to that?
She is literally, if you guys have seen ContraPoint's climate change video, the character that ContraPoint plays who just wants to like drink champagne in the bathtub. And she's like, I don't want to know about this, you nerd.
Watch this.
Something, you know, all of these questions are very important. And especially when we're talking about something like climate change, I mean, this is something that, you know, if you look at the Democratic left and you look at everyone on stage, they had a 7-hour debate over this. I mean, who even watched that?
Ed watched all of it.
Look at her eyes. She's like staring into the abyss.
What do you think about that? Do you even care?
There you go. But you know, we should say this: these protests are taking place across the globe. Millions of people participating in this.
So what you're saying is whoever's organizing this has global reach.
Of course. The global democratic left actually has promoted these marches in 156 countries around the world, including Nepal, Senegal, Quebec, Rome, Kyrgyzstan, Sweden, Bolivia, Peru. I think they were playing some footage from Poland.
South Africa.
There's 1.1 million school students in New York City who are going to be participating. So
it's a lot of people who want to put off the rapture and God's judgment.
I know it. I can't believe they would spend 7 hours though.
Like, what are they so afraid of?
It's crazy. All right. Well, we will get to Ben Dixon in a moment, but first, support for today's show comes from Mova Globes. As I've said many times before, this is now like a regular staple. Saul keeps asking me, where's my globe? But these things are pretty awesome. They turn all on their own, with or without a base. You can see that. They sort of float in their covering. You can spin them, or it's a little bit hypnotic. I'm going to try and get through this without hypnotizing myself.
Tropes.
But there's no batteries needed, nothing like that. They come on a couple of different cases. I've got the acrylic one, or stands. I got the acrylic one right here, and they just, they sit on your desk. They sit on your mantle, wherever it is. They're, over 40 different designs, including world maps, outer space, different planets, famous artwork. There's something for everyone. The outer space collection even features a graphic that's provided by NASA, complete with planets, moons, asteroids, and constellation designs, and a version of like what the Earth looks like from space. Great gift for someone who has everything, or for kids, graduation, Hanukkah, and of course, you could also just use it as decor. I love having at least one or two globes around. at all times. And so any derivation I can get, they have one where James Cook, the captain who he was a British explorer, and he, I don't know, it's like 1700s maybe. And so they have his paths around essentially the globe, or his voyages. There's no Antarctica because they didn't know about it at the time, which is pretty cool. They have the Van Gogh and Monet globes, a Mars globe. It's cool stuff. Check it out. And you can check it all out by going to movaglobes.com/majority. Use the code majority for 10% off your purchase. That's M-O-V-A, movaglobes.com/majority. Use the code majority for 10% off your purchase. Of course, this will be in the podcast notes as well. Another sponsor of today's program, ZipRecruiter. As you know, hiring can be a laboriously slow process. For example, Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. He was having trouble finding qualified applicants. He switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It goes out, searches and finds and brings you candidates. Its technology identifies people with the right experience, invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. We've been there. We've done this. Brendan is a ZipRecruiter candidate that we ended up hiring. And I mean, that's worked out pretty well, right, Brendan? Yeah, he says so. Miskowitz used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones, just like I did. I don't know. I must have brought in probably a dozen people, maybe. I don't want this to go to your head, Brendan. But that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days, and that's how I found my new director of Brendan in a few days. That was one of the things that gave Brendan a leg up. It was named. I already had the name, and I just needed to find somebody who could fit in there. But with results like that, no wonder. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And we did. I could have stopped after the first day, but nobody was named Brendan, and so that would have made it impossible. You can see why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. ZipRecruiter, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, Z-I-P, Recruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. All right, quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Ben Dixon himself. Ben, welcome back to the program.
Sam, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So let's start with the what's going on in terms of impeachment and whistleblower complaint. This whistleblower complaint. I mean, they are unrelated at this moment in some respects, but I think they're related in terms of this battle that seems to be going on within the Democratic caucus, where we now have, I think, 136 Democrats who are on record in support of impeachment. That would leave, I don't know, about 80 some odd, or maybe about 100 plus who are not out publicly for impeachment at this point. Nancy Pelosi, there was a story in Politico 2 or 3 days ago that apparently about a week ago she was in chastising the staff members of the Judiciary Committee in front of the entire caucus and said, I don't care if this leaks out. Now, I mean, she clearly has been stifling this thing. We had some pretty interesting testimony, I thought, from Corey Lewandowski this week, particularly after he was, I mean, and almost specifically when he was questioned by the staff attorney, Barry Burke, I think is his name. And so, I mean, just put all this in context and we can get a little bit deeper into this whistleblower story, which seems to be drip dropping out. In fact, let's do this. Let's play this clip of Adam Schiff. Apparently, the story goes that a whistleblower went to the DNI, said, I've got a problem here with something. Then went to the inspector general of the directorate of national intelligence. And the IG said, this is a urgent, compelling issue that we find at least credible. And this whistleblower complaint by statute needs to be given to the relevant committees in Congress, and the DNI denied, basically suppressed this whistleblower complaint, supposedly on the orders of the Justice Department, which I don't know why they get to do this either. I mean, I don't know why anybody does. And the IG went to the House Intelligence Committee, testified behind closed doors as to what the nature of the complaint is. So Adam Schiff, presumably in this clip, this was from yesterday at about one o'clock, knows what the complaint was. And here it is.
Mr. Atkinson wrote, I set forth the reasons for my concluding that the subject matter involved in the complainant's disclosure not only falls within the DNI's jurisdiction, but relates to one of the most significant and important of the DNI's responsibilities to the American people. This is what's being withheld from Congress right now. We do know that the Department of Justice has been involved in the decision to withhold that information from Congress. We do not know because we cannot get an answer to the question about whether the White House is also involved in preventing this information from coming to Congress. We do not have the complaint. We do not know whether the press reports are accurate or inaccurate about the contents of that complaint. But what I do know is this. If in a matter within the jurisdiction of the Director of National Intelligence, you have an employee of that community or a contractor or detailee who follows the law and makes a complaint, and it is possible for the subject of that complaint to essentially quash the complaint or keep it from Congress, then this system is badly broken.
Okay, and let me just clarify one thing here. So apparently this guy Atkinson, who is the IG, he was not authorized to tell the committee anything of substance about the complaint. Only he was testifying as to his analysis that, in fact, from a statutory perspective, it was a legitimate complaint and needed to be communicated to Congress, which, of course, the DNI lawyer disagrees with. I mean, so, you know, this is another process thing that's being bogged down. But this is why, and we saw part of that this week with the Barry Burke, I think it is, or testimony, or I should say questioning of Corey Lewandowski. And that is, when you move into an impeachment mode, there are all sorts of rules changes that to the process that can expedite things and shake things loose. And yet Nancy Pelosi wants none of it.
That's the refrain. That's the chorus. That's the hook of the song for the season, right? Nancy Pelosi, for whatever reason, doesn't want to impeach anyone. We saw it with Brett Kavanaugh. More evidence has come out against him. We're seeing it. And here's the disturbing part about this. It's not just that we have a president who is not only criminal in his own personal behavior, whether it reaches high crimes and misdemeanors, that's up for debate. And that's why we have the impeachment inquiry. But it's the fact that he has the ability to get different parts of this government to act in a manner that itself creates a constitutional crisis, right? The fact that we have the DOJ overstepping its bounds once again to suppress information that just so happens to be a threat to the president. And yet the one remedy that we have to actually address these issues, the Speaker of the House, the leader of the opposition party, if we can call it that at this point, chooses not to. And I'm still not clear as to why, because there's really no justification. If your fear is a political one, then you are literally putting politics before your job and before your oath.
I mean, let's putting that question aside for a moment, the politics one, because I think that, you know, that's but I agree with you. It's stunning. And I've said this half a dozen times this week. I'll say it one more time. The framers of the Constitution, the people who wrote the Constitution, contemplated Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not the it was contemplated. He is not the moment that America doesn't become America. What the framers did not contemplate was to have Nancy Pelosi do nothing.
Right.
I mean,
right.
In light of like an incredibly unpopular president. Who is, you know, the House impeached Andrew Johnson back in the day during Reconstruction because he was vetoing everything. He was being very difficult. He was acting erratically outside of office, et cetera, et cetera. And the case to impeach Donald Trump seems to me to be so much less partisan, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, right. This guy is literally doing the things, even, you know, it's his corruption is so old school that they all of the commentary and contemplate, like, we don't want somebody who's going to use the office to enrich himself with foreign powers. Like that's it feels like what this whistleblower was talking about was very similar to that, whether I don't know if you're getting cash or if it's just like, we're going to get some services in kind for the campaign by promising you things like, you know, you go and do an investigation on Joe Biden's kid.
Joe Biden. Yeah.
And we'll make it worth your while with a certain investment or God knows what they've gotten from the Saudis. When we look back on this era, putting aside politics for a moment, when we look back on this era, and we say, where was the failure of our institutions? The failure is not going to be in the presidency. The failure is going to be in the House.
Right. That's the surprising thing about it, right? Nancy Pelosi is uniquely positioning herself in history to be a bigger problem than Donald Trump, right? Donald Trump is essentially daring America to impeach him. He's saying, I'm going to do and everything that you could possibly imagine. It's almost as though he is uniquely designed to violate everything possible, the way he thinks. Like for him to offer a quote unquote bribe is not even a bribe to him. That's just how he does business.
Right.
But that's not how you run the presidency. That's not how you are the chief executive of this country. And yet he operates in that manner. And Nancy Pelosi just simply looks and says, we're going to leave it alone because for whatever reason. Now, in full transparency, I've put in a call. I'm supposed to have a conversation with someone who works on her team because I want to know, like, you know, you and I, Sam, I think you and I might have been one of the few progressives to give her the benefit of the doubt when she was running for speaker. And because we know one thing about Nancy Pelosi, when she wants to get something done, she's going to get it done.
Yes.
And now we see that she does not want to get this done, and there's absolutely no movement on it. So I just need to know why. You know, people want to know why I'm like full throated against Nancy Pelosi. Well, they need to explain why she is not doing her job as Speaker of the House.
And so let's address this political question, right? Because in that same instance, when Johnson was impeached by the House, he was not impeached by the he was not convicted, I should say, by the right. Senate. And so he wasn't removed. And my understanding of the history is the reason why he was not was because the Senate felt that he that from a political standpoint, they didn't want to do that. That it would have been, mm-hmm. Better to run against him than to have him impeached, in part because they didn't have a vice president at the time. And they ultimately decided on political grounds. But I don't understand the political calculation here. Okay. Like I can understand the concept of she has a political reason, but the political calculation seems just befuddling to me. Now, maybe they feel like, look, we don't have the votes. We can't control the people in our caucus. But again, that cuts right. against what you and I both know about Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yeah.
And,
certainly.
And it also cuts against the data that came out of 2018. I mean, it's one thing to say that if you're in a purple district, right, that you maybe can't come out for, a government control of all the major industries or something. But it's another thing to say that you can't come out against Donald Trump. I mean, mm-hmm. these so-called frontline districts, this is not where Donald Trump won by 12 percentage points in 2016. Mm-hmm. These are ones where it was, evenly balanced. And to the extent that in 2018, people won in those districts, it was because they distanced themselves from Donald Trump because they attacked Donald Trump. The ones that lost in these districts were ones that hewed too closely to Donald Trump. I mean, this is what Bytecofer, the pollster who had predicted this, the win in like June or May of 2018, her model showed this and makes that quite clear. And Nancy Pelosi seems to be just ignoring all of it.
You know what? I don't want to believe in 10-dimensional chess, but something just dawned on me. And I'm going to throw this out here and see, and you tell me what you think. Perhaps it's timing, right? I've never seen Nancy Pelosi be just completely feckless in anything that she's attempted to do as Speaker of the House. She's been pretty vicious and pretty cutthroat and got things done. Maybe she's simply trying to time this. This is the only thing I can give her, Sam. It's a stretch. She's trying to time this so that during the election, we are in the impeachment inquiry and we have not yet reached the stage where the Senate can find him not guilty or not convict him, rather. And so he doesn't have a political victory to go into the elections. Instead, during the entirety of the elections, he's mired in the inquiry. That could be the only reason I could see valid for her to hold out this long.
I suppose. If she thinks it's going to be more effective at that time from a political standpoint, and that you could have the vote in October of 2016, mm-hmm. 2020, and then put it on the Senate. But I don't know. I'd like to see the Senate have to deal with this for like 3 or 4 months, and at least, right? And we're in September now. Yeah. We're almost in. I mean, I don't know when is the magic time. The only thing that strikes me is that she either believes that she can't get the votes from the Democratic caucus in the House, mm-hmm. which I find hard to believe.
Right.
Or she doesn't trust Chuck Schumer to do his job and that he and she's not convinced, because that would also be very problematic. I mean, if the whole idea is that you want the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate, to quash this. But I don't know, how bad you'd have to be at your job if you're Chuck Schumer to not be able to deliver these votes. Like, I could see maybe right. Joe Manchin, maybe.
Mm-hmm, certainly Joe Manchin.
Being the lone holdout, but that doesn't seem to me to expose too many House members. Although, that's, I, For the life of me, I'm befuddled by it. And the Lewandowski thing showed a little bit of a taste of what they could do, with impeachment.
Again, like I said, that I can't think of any reason either. But if I had to just really try, the only thing that makes sense is she's trying to get the timing right on it for political purposes. But again, your question is the one that's most paramount. When is the magic time then? When is the moment that she's going to strike? Because there is a lengthy period for the inquiry as well as the Senate hearing, the Senate trial.
We'll have a better notion going forward. I would think like this whistleblower thing might be able to give them the sort of like, the more impetus to push this stuff. But there is a quality of Nancy Pelosi being out of step, right? And just sort of like not understanding this political moment. The idea of being afraid of polarization is just absurd. There's times where you basically, polarize. I'm talking, I want to pivot to Joe Biden here, who I think is also not of the moment, but a lot of this is just sort of like, look, you don't want to engage in the fight, but it's a dumb thing to say when someone is pounding on your face with their fist. Honestly, it's like, yeah, look, I don't believe in fighting. And so I'm not going to add to this as the person is pounding you into pounding your face. And that is the situation that we're going to have going into 2020. You're going to have a polarized electorate and you're not going to be able to. It's not a question of convincing people who have already chosen sides. It's a question of mobilizing anybody who might be in any way sympathetic to your cause. And one, as we talk about this election, there was a stat that came out today about college students. They doubled their rate of participation from 2014 to 2020. To 2018. That's stunning. This is an off-year election. And that is, I think, pretty stunning. I have a feeling 2016 was not a banner year for college students to vote. And I imagine they're going to come out, with a similar dynamic. And if that holds true, I guess we'll see maybe some of that in the primary season. But we have the polls. I know you've been sort of banging the drum on this thing of, the intra-scene squabbles on the left. Just give me your sense of where everything sits at this point.
Well, I mean, let me start with Joe Biden, right? He is so out of step, and it was weird that we saw Pete Buttigieg kind of parrot some of that same those same talking points as we don't want to be too polarizing. But like you said, we are in the height of hyperpolarization in this country. I can't imagine us getting more polarized. And what is going to diminish the vote, the turnout on our side, is for someone who is not willing to engage in the fight. The people want a fighter. They want a champion who can take it to Donald Trump the way he's been taking it to us over the last, even beyond his presidency, since before his presidency. So Joe Biden is completely out of step in that way. And if he survives the primaries and gets the general election, he certainly is not going to mobilize the people if he's talking about not engaging in the fight. We honestly need a street fighter in this election. In terms of the primaries and the bitter divide, I think the number one thing that we need to focus on the left, progressives, is to get rid of Joe Biden. There's a lot for us to discuss between everyone else. But the first and foremost thing we need to do is make sure that we're telling people not to vote for Joe Biden, because not only will he lose, but he'll depress the vote for who knows how long it would take for us to recover from another 4 years of Trump, because we elected or we nominated someone like Joe Biden who wants to not get into the fight.
I'm convinced, that of the viable candidates at this point in the Democratic primary, that Biden represents the biggest risk because of the reason you're talking about. I mean, I'm terribly scared about it.
Absolutely.
Let me ask your opinion on this, because Biden's most prominent strength at this point seems to be older African-American voters. And predominantly in the South. Mm-hmm. And What is, I mean, I have a theory about what concerns me about this cohort. Mm-hmm. I think this cohort is going to come out and vote for whomever is the Democratic nominee.
Yep.
Right? Because they're heavily, heavily invested in Donald Trump losing. I mean, we all are, but I think, you know, there are reasons why if you were an African-American and particularly an older one, why you would be like, that is paramount. Everything else is secondary because they have more experience with you know, the implications of someone like this. But they also are an incredibly reliable vote. I'm convinced that I haven't seen any data on this, and I would love someone to pull it, but it's probably just not worth it for whomever. But if Biden's support comes from people who are reliable Democratic voters, that is not terribly helpful in terms of an argument as to why he needs to be the nominee. Whereas, hypothetically speaking, there's another candidate who brings out African-American voters who are marginal insofar as their reliability to vote at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a spot on analysis. Here's the problem that we face, though, and this is why it's so critical that we don't waste time bickering in the primaries, is that those reliable Democratic voters who are going to support or who currently support Joe Biden, they're going to come out in the primaries. They're going to be the ones who show up. They're already registered. They don't have to beat the deadline to register in their state. They've been registered Democrat all their life. And so they are going to be the ones to show up in the primaries. The real question is how well organized is every other campaign, particularly Warren and Sanders? Are they organized enough to make sure that they can rival those votes during the primaries? Or are we using our energy to fight one another when we all should just be registering the hell out of everyone we possibly can and making sure they know their primary dates and making sure that they have the energy and the motivation to actually show up, because Joe Biden voters are going to show up if no one else does.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, I'm looking at like the, I mean, it's sort of fascinating what's going on now within the media. And I don't know how important it is, frankly. And I could make an argument that it's disadvantageous for Bernie Sanders, but I also could say that it's to his advantage that the media does not take him seriously at this juncture. Mm-hmm. But latest California poll, Sanders tied for first. Latest New Hampshire poll in the Boston Herald, Sanders in first place. Mm. The newest Iowa poll from CBS, Sanders 3% behind Biden. Latest Nevada poll, Sanders in first. Latest South Carolina poll, also from CBS, Sanders in second. I mean, that's a good place to be in. He is ignored in every conversation that I have seen. It's bizarre. And I think, you know, there is an argument that at least nationally, his numbers have been pretty static. And, you know, consistent throughout. But when you're talking about, and you could also argue that, like, when you look at, like, second choice voting in these instances, he's sort of down on the list. You know, like, even in some instances in Iowa, I've seen polls where Buttigieg is more second choice than Bernie. But, I mean, you really have to go deep into the crosstabs to make an argument that Bernie Sanders is not as viable as Biden or Warren. I mean, it's bizarre.
Yeah, anyone making that argument at this point is completely disingenuous and just change the channel. The problem is there's so many people on so many channels who are carrying those talking points. And I don't know if it was on your show. It was pretty recently, though, that I discussed that these people have a vested interest in keeping Bernie out of the conversation, because not only as consultants and not only as the consulting class, the Democratic establishment, like, their entire livelihood is centered around the machine as it exists today, both in the media, consulting world, political world, fundraisers, PACs, It's built off of the way the world is structured right now. And so who's the biggest threat to that structure? It's going to be Bernie Sanders. And so they have every incentive, whether they would admit it or not. We know they have an incentive to keep Bernie out of the conversation as much as they possibly can. But still, despite all that, he's performing and he's outperforming in a lot of ways.
I like you, am convinced that the best chance that a progressive has to win, which includes, I don't care if you're a Warren supporter or a Bernie supporter, the best chance for your candidate to win is if it's a three-way race deep mm-hmm. into this race. Because mm-hmm. as soon as it's a two-way race, the candidate on the left, whether it's Warren or Sanders, is going to get the 100% of that fire. And mm-hmm. I think part of the reason why Bernie's left out of the conversation is so that the critique, the most leftward critiques can be aimed at Warren. Where, you know, and so I think that's what they're trying. I don't know if it's a conscious effort. I just think that it's like more comfortable for them to do this. And I think, you know, that is my, you know, argument as to why you don't want, if you're a Warren fan, you don't want Bernie out of the race now. If you're a Bernie fan, you don't want Warren out of the race right now. You don't want to be, you know, the real concern, I think, for folks is Buttigieg, to be honest with you, because he's got a lot of money and he's like a number. I'm looking at this. There's a poll from Iowa State University. And when you're talking about like second place, if the Democratic caucus were held today, which of the following candidates would be your second choice? Warren is in the lead for this question with 18%. Buttigieg comes in second, 14%. Huh. And so, I mean, then you got Kamala Harris, then you got Biden, then you got Bernie. And so I would be very concerned about Pete Buttigieg at this point from the left. Joe Biden is going to be Joe Biden. And I think, you know, it's quite possible. I think people also should have that concern. But Buttigieg seems to me to be the threat, at least in the beginning. And then it's just a question of like, you know, if Sanders' numbers here for California and New Hampshire and Nevada and South Carolina hold, I mean, he's in very good shape. Let me ask you this. Is there room, getting back to those older African-Americans who are supporting Joe Biden? And I you know, I couldn't answer this question. And my grandparents, my grandparents, at least my grandmother, she spent the winter in like the Boynton Beach area of Florida.
Oh yeah, I used to live there.
and I don't know if you ran into her at any point, but I remember Sarah Silverman doing the Great Schlep, which was during the 2008 campaign, trying to get young Jews to tell their grandparents not to be such bigots and vote for Barack Obama, which is basically what it came down to. And I don't know what percentage. I don't know if that was effective at all. I have no idea. I mean, I feel like I could have convinced my grandmother to stay at home. I don't know who she voted for at the time, but I, you know, at the very least, I feel like I could convince her to stay at home by just by telling her the wrong date on the election. But do you think that something similar? I just saw a piece in the Times talking about this. Do you think that there's something similar? Because certainly Sanders does much better with a younger African-American cohort than he does with an older one, which is across the board. Same with white people, too, for that matter. But do you think that there's like,
oh, yeah,
would something like that be effective?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's actually happening, right? And you're mentioning the piece by Steve Herndon. He wrote, and it came out yesterday or today. This is the only way it's going to happen, right? The younger generation, younger Black folks who are far more steeped in, like, far more online and know the information, understand the necessity for Medicare for All, understand the risk. They understand the risk that they're up against. They're actively trying to convince their parents to just leave Joe Biden alone. How much of a change will that make? You know, what percentage are we talking about? I don't know, but I do know that it's an effective strategy because your parents, it's funny. The older you get, the more your parents will listen to you, right? That's a phenomenon. Like, I was able to convince my mother to change her vote as well. I got her off of Biden. And so I think if everyone actually tried to employ that across the board, but particularly in the African-American community, we can shake that loose. A lot of people just feel comfortable with Joe Biden because of Barack Obama. They feel comfortable with Joe Biden because, you know, at least his racism is baked in and they become accustomed to the taste of his racism. But if you shake them up a little bit and just show them how informed you are, how active you are and how passionate you are, your parents would probably come along with you. I know it kind of sounds like, you know, kind of mushy and everything else, but that's really where we are at this point. Here's another way to think about it. I don't really want to mention it, but with the Working Families poll, one thing I noticed was there was a lot of activity on the Warren side with one-on-one conversations, personal text messages, personal phone calls to people to actively say, hey, we want you to support this candidate. And ultimately, it went in that direction. I think we cannot neglect the one-on-one relationships that we have and our ability to convince that one person in our house or those 10 people in our immediate sphere of influence that Joe, if nothing else, Joe Biden is not the pick. I think that's the preeminent message. You can argue over Warren and Sanders, but we all should agree that Biden has to get out of the way.
I mean, it's much easier to just say, rather than convince somebody to vote for someone and just say, like, your choice is just not viable.
Right.
And because that's when this race starts to shake loose. I mean, the idea that this is going to be a two-person race at this stage of where the polls are, I think is people are deluding themselves. It is much better for the left, from my perspective, to have two candidates of the left that are there. Now, I know there are some who would, you know, I mean, there's obviously critiques of Warren. There's, you know, there's critiques of Bernie. But nevertheless, when you look at this field, there is, I think, to the extent that it's binary, they're on the left and the rest of the folks are not.
Yeah. And I honestly don't believe that Warren and Sanders are going to cannibalize each other's voters. Like, I think that the Venn diagram between those voters is spaced out enough so that is a viable strategy, right? Most people are going to say we don't want them both in the race because they're going to pull from each other. But you know, if this week is in any indication, the way the cohorts are lining up and the lines are being divided, there seem to be enough differences between those two camps to be able to use each other to fight back against Biden together versus tossing one of those candidates out of the race.
Lastly, I just should say that apparently, I just got texted from my sister. My grandmother did vote for Obama.
Ah, there you go.
So all's well that ends well. Ben Dixon, always a pleasure, man. I'm glad to have an opportunity to talk to you about this because obviously this is like a big topic, you know, probably mostly online at this point.
Yeah.
So much of our assessment, you know, my understanding is 9% of Democratic voters have settled on their candidate. There's a lot of room for change. But Ben Dixon, folks can check out the Benjamin Dixon Show on YouTube, right? Or you can find it as a podcast. Yep. I hope people are listening to your program on a regular basis.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam. It's always a pleasure, man.
Ben, we'll talk again soon. Thanks. All right, folks, going to take a quick break, and we will go to the chief youth correspondent of the Majority Report, I hope. I don't know. She's calling me freaking out, but that could be anything. That could be just a function of, like, she wants her allowance or something like that. But we will take a quick break and hopefully talk to my daughter, who is hopefully at the climate protest in New York City. We are back on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program as our now our chief youth correspondent for the Majority Report, Myla Cedar. Myla, where are you right now?
I am near City Hall.
And what's going on? Are there any other people there?
Yeah, there's like basically, from what I can tell, maybe a million, something like that. There's so many people here. It's insane.
Well, just give me a sense of like, where are you looking out on? Like, are they all students from all around the city?
It's insane how many kids I saw. Like there's so many high schoolers here, and there's so many kids here, and there's like, everyone's here, and some people are just trying to get through, and like, and I feel bad for them, but it's truly amazing.
And so what are people, are there people carrying signs? I mean, what are people
doing?
Oh
my gosh. Yeah, so many people are carrying signs right now. It's insane. And we're trying, me and my friend are trying to find Greta Thunberg. Oh, wait. Dad?
Yeah?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, you can hear all the screaming. I think people are starting to move. I'm not sure where everyone is.
And so are there speakers there or
I think people are waiting for Greta Thunberg. I'm not sure where she is. That's what me and my friend are trying to do right now. And then like, I know famous celebrities are going to be here, like Jaden Smith, Willow Smith. That's all I know right now, but there might be other people.
And well, let me get a sense. So why are you doing this, aside from obviously seeing some of your top celebrities? But why are you doing this?
Because I feel like it's like we're the next generation, yeah. And like we have to kind of like, we can't just like sit back and let it happen, because we're clearly like, we're going to end up, stuff's going to happen, and we're going to end up like, I don't know, like we have to, yeah. Like if we don't do anything about this, like the world's going to go into crisis. Not necessarily in like, I don't know, 17 months or 12 years, but if we, it's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. So what we're trying to do is just kind of make a statement that like, we're the future, we're the next generation, and we're not going to let this slide, you know?
And, how excited, I mean, are your friends and the other students, I mean, to do this, or does everybody sort of have that, share that sense and,
Everyone shares that sense. It's amazing. It's amazing. Everywhere I go, it's like there's like the enthusiasm is just like 100%, like 155 billion%. It's like so many people are just so like, it's so much empower, like from our generation. Like there's so many kids from like all over New York City just like coming here to protest and stuff.
Do you guys, I mean, do your friend, how much do you guys fret about this? Like how?
Well, what do you mean?
Like, I mean, how much when all the difficulty in being in eighth and ninth grade and stuff like that? How much of an extra burden is this on you guys? I mean, do you guys talk about this like when you're hanging out? I mean, how much does it come up in between your conversations with your friends?
Oh, I mean, like, it's honestly, like, it's insane. Like many people are, like, talking about it. Many people are excited about it. You know, it's just, like, it's insane. It's a great movement, and everyone's really happy about it.
But I'm not talking about this particular protest or the movement. Like, but when you guys are hanging out, when you're hanging out with your friends, or when you're at school and you're just, you know, shooting the stuff mm-hmm. with each other, how often does this come up? I mean, do you guys, is this an ongoing concern, or is it just something that's, you know, in the background?
Well, honestly, like, I think that it's not necessarily in the background, but it is one of my main concerns, and it is one of millions, many concerns. And, like, that's what people care about a lot. But, like, you know, like, being a teenager is difficult, and, you know, it's like you have so much to worry about, and then you kind of have to, like, worry about this too, because this is your future. So I would say many people are super aware of it and super caring about it, because there's so many, you can hear, there's so many people here everywhere I'm walking. Like, there's just like crowds and yelling and screaming. It's just the most, it's so interesting, and it's crazy how many people you see here. And it's like, you run into people that you haven't seen in ages. And it's just like, it's an amazing thing. It's so amazing. Just like seeing everything.
So what do you think you're going to do? I mean, after this, I mean, what do you guys have a sense of, like, what the next steps are?
I mean, like, honestly, I think that I hope that this protest kind of makes people realize, like, makes the older generation realize that, like, there is an issue going on, and that, like, the new generation's not afraid to stick up for it. We're about to be in a huge crowd, so I might lose you.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that you wanna tell us about what's going on down there, or just in general?
Well, I can tell you that it's the most super. It's like 10 times the size of the climate march. It's 10 times the size of the climate march from March of 2019.
Right.
So it's amazing. It's super cool.
All right. Well, good luck. Stay safe.
Thank you. I will.
All right. I'll talk to you later. I'll see you probably
all right.
in a couple hours.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Good job. There she is.
Wow.
Chief.
The kids are all right.
Kids are all right. And I hope they, like, you know. It's a lot to ask of a ninth grader to start organizing. There are obviously some kids who who are more in tune with that. But I think this is good. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of something like this, because I don't remember another instance of such a student dominated protest with this many people. And I got to imagine it's going to. I mean, I brought Mila down to Occupy a couple of times, and it was intimidating for her to be around that many people protesting. We got caught up in a couple of marches occasionally, and
that many white dreadlocks would also be intimidating.
There was a whole bunch of stuff that was intimidating. But you know, you get to a certain age, and then you feel a little more confident. And I wonder I would imagine we're going to see some organizations and some organizing and some and more protests coming out of what we've seen this week. And I don't know how much the message will resonate. We watch this Fox News report, and everybody's just like, I can't believe they're 7 hours. I mean,
well, the scary part is the people in power are free to ignore it.
Yep.
We saw that with the Iraq war. Millions of people protested and it didn't do anything.
That's true. That's true. But hopefully this will resonate more. And I hope there are, campaigns out there. I mean, I guess there's not a lot of people to register because a lot of these people are not going to be voting age. Although I would imagine the seniors, right, will be 18 by next year. By next November, I mean, certainly. And it'll be interesting to note whether what percentage. I mean, we're talking about a million students, supposedly, in New York City. I don't know if they're all down there, but a million students, and, you know, I don't know how many, what the percentage of that would be seniors, but 100,000.
Yeah. And even if they can't vote, there are lots of different ways that they can get involved. Obviously, I mean, YDSA has chapters all over the country
there
with kids as young as high school.
There you go. All right. We're going to take a break, go into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Should get some type of Myla branded swag, maybe. That might be.
She's going to be all of our boss someday, isn't she?
Yeah, she's already mine.
Whoa.
Already mine.
You delivered that way too convincingly. Man.
Yes.
I felt your exhaustion.
Oh, my God. But she did a great job. I'm very proud. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Check out the AM Quickie. Just about to send the Quickie off on its own into the world on its own little feed. So check it out today. Super easy for you at the moment. All you got to do is check your Majority Report audio podcast feed or sign up for it or just visit it. Listen to one every morning. We get them out the door now. Brendan, when are we getting them out the door now? By like almost like 8:30 every day, right? Pretty close. So, today is Friday. Yesterday was Thursday. The day before that was Wednesday. The day before that was Tuesday. What happened on Tuesday, Michael?
Oh, what happened this previous Tuesday was, Jesus Christ, Emma Vigeland. I literally forgot for a second.
It was all the way back on Tuesday.
Wow. That was a you moment right there. And coming up this Tuesday, I'm very excited to be welcoming Mikayla Wilkes to the show. She's running for Congress. She's challenging Steny Hoyer. We talked with Shahid Buttar about his campaign to replace Nancy Pelosi, and now we'll talk with Mikayla about her campaign to replace Steny Hoyer. I really could not imagine a bigger upgrade in every way, shape, and form.
Huge upgrade.
Like, insanely big upgrade. A real progressive, real left candidate with who speaks actually very movingly and cogently about her life experience in a very genuine way. And then also Mike Racine and I are going to be talking about politics and movies, starting with this new ad for this. Have you seen the new, I forget the guy, from The Office is starring in a new Amazon series the most stunning pro-Venezuela war propaganda.
Oh, John Krasinski, Jack Ryan.
No.
And so we are going to go a little bit on a tour of Hollywood militarism with
If Jim wasn't depressing before, Jim Halper, you wait.
There's a lot of people who don't know that the Department of Defense underwrites a lot of Hollywood films.
Well, big story back in the aughts.
So that's kind of what we're going to be getting. We're going to, on the more sort of substance end, we'll get into that, but we'll also just be watching some schlocky movies and making fun of them. Patreon.com/TMBS. Michael Brooks Show on YouTube, first 76,000 subs. Thanks, everybody.
The one of the other benefits of getting rid of Steny Hoyer, in fact, probably the biggest benefit beyond just upgrading a specific congressperson, is Steny Hoyer, the way that he has been able to maintain power in the House and get discipline is by having enough corporate donors that he doesn't have to worry about raising money for himself. Being able to go out and raise money for others, and to get rid of that influence in the House, it'll undoubtedly go to some other corporatist, but you're still diluting it to a certain extent.
That's still
great.
Big. And could you imagine the every element of that win? I mean, and you know, Shahid too. Shahid's great as well. Yep.
And just broadly speaking, challenging primaries against, I think, all Democratic candidates, frankly, is an extremely healthy thing. And
except for Ed Markey with Joe Kennedy, Joe Kennedy absolutely sucks.
Yeah, get out of here.
Yeah, he doesn't even, there's no old style Kennedy fun or glamour. It's just all entitlement. And Ed Markey's actually really not half bad.
I wouldn't hesitate in a moment to vote for Markey, but broadly speaking, I am like pro challenge. Keep everybody on their toes. I don't think Kennedy is an upgrade from to Markey at all, but I will take all these challenges over non-challenges. But yes.
There is such a thing as a primary from the right, like what they're planning to do to the squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And frankly, I'm not convinced that Joe Kennedy is not a primary from the right of Markey, frankly. Yes, Warren endorsed Markey. AOC endorsed Markey. I mean, I think they saw this coming down the pike, as it were, the mass pike. Anyways, Jamie.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
So this week on the Antifada, Sean and Andy dropped an emergency episode on the UAW strike. So if you really want to understand what's going on with that strike, its significance to the labor movement and its historical context, I highly, highly recommend it. That means that we pushed our episode with Aaron Bastani till next week. We already recorded it. It's very good, if I do say so myself. We talk about his book, Fully Automated Luxury Communism, bring up some of the critiques that people have brought to it. And yeah, we had a good conversation. Also, this weekend, we're recording a new episode with people from No New Jails. And I'm very excited to talk about the prison abolition movement.
Matt.
We talked about it earlier, the disappearance of 3 billion birds since the 1970s. Hear about an earlier instance of Americans killing off what was about two-fifths of the bird population by massacring just the passenger pigeon by the hundreds during right after the American Revolution.
This is why we can't have nice things.
All right, quick break. See you.
Sorry, that's in the Pioneers episode of Literary Hangover.
See you in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27, 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
but Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
Hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.